Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, and this is our first edition of Office Evolution Radio for January 2019, and I'm excited to have Full House here at Office Evolution Dunwoody. First up on the show is Jay Bandy with Hobnob Atlanta. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you, Lee.
Hobnob Atlanta, you guys a restaurant here in town, a local restaurant, correct?
Yes, we just opened up at Perimeter Place. It's our third location, opened up 4 weeks ago. Our original location, which is still open and operating, despite the news you might hear, at the corner of Monroe and Piedmont.
And then, so you're venturing outside the perimeter? Or?
Yeah, this is our first foray outside the perimeter. Our second location opened up at Town Brookhaven about 9 months ago. So we're getting ready to go on a year.
So you were slowly edging your way north.
Yes, but we're bouncing back. We'll be in Atlantic Station fourth quarter of this year.
Oh, wow. Good for you. So tell us about Hobnob, what type of food and what type of atmosphere?
Hobnob, you know, the name connotes a gathering of people having a good time and, you know, clinking of glasses and a cheer. So it's modeled after really an English tavern. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's about also good food. And so we have a chef-driven menu. This time of the year, we have pot roast on the menu. We've got pot pie. We have, you know, warm comfort food, as well as we have a selection of burgers. You can get a lamb burger, a beef burger, a veggie burger, grass-fed burgers, and then, you know, the traditional fish and chips.
So now, so it's kind of pub-ish?
It's pub-ish, you know, with a little bit of twist. One of the things that you'll see in the restaurant when you come in is we have games on the wall as you walk in the door. So you can play board games, you can mm-hmm. play cards, which is good for all folks. So sometimes it's families, you know, playing a game, or it's, you know, folks later in the evening just out with their friends having fun and grabbing a beer.
So now how did the concept come about?
The concept came about with one of my business partners, Sean, who started the concept. He goes back with Gilbert's. Gilbert's on 10th with his brother. And so his brother and he came up with the concept just looking for something that was just a neighborhood tavern concept. And the original location, you know, definitely has that feel. The location's been there for years. And that's where it came from. And then, you know, really kind of took off. That's been a really successful location for us. And, you know, I've worked with Sean for going on 5 years now. And, you know, we saw the growth potential of the brand.
So now managing or operating a multi-unit restaurant brand, I guess, what's the objective? Is it to be a local brand or are you looking to take this national?
No, we're looking at just staying local. Potentially regional, you know, we might expand to Nashville or Charlotte, markets like that in the future, but we're definitely focused on the Atlanta market right now.
So now how do you do things differently if you're a one restaurant kind of brand as opposed to a multi-unit brand?
Yeah, it you know, we're going through those challenges right now with unit number three because, mm-hmm. you know, unit number three looks like number two, which is Brookhaven. So Brookhaven and the perimeter location are very similar, and so we do have to have continuity. We're going to share customers with our, you know, sister location.
Right.
So we definitely are working on standardization of practices in the restaurant. So the guest, when they come in, has the same experience.
Right,
no
a consistent experience.
Absolutely.
Now, what about the Atlanta restaurant market? How do you find it?
It's an interesting place. You know, there's a lot of challenges due to the growth of restaurants in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of restaurants in this market. And the other thing is, you know, with labor being what it is, you know, with the unemployment rate, you know, record lows, that's definitely put a lot of pressure
on staffing. So finding
talent
is a challenge.
It's a huge challenge.
Now, I feel that we're kind of in a golden age of restaurants. It seems like there's all good restaurants. Like the it was a time when I was younger that, like, oh, there'd be a bad restaurant. You'd be like, oh, that's bad. But there weren't that many choices. And nowadays, it seems like all the restaurants are pretty good, right? And it's just a matter of what's going to be that compelling restaurant that I'm going to go back to regularly.
Absolutely. Yeah. The, you know, if you look at the variety of cuisine that's available in the Atlanta market versus 20 years ago, right? You know, it's amazing how much it's changed. And also, you know, I think folks have elevated their game. You know, you, if you look at Atlanta on a national basis, you know, Atlanta's definitely risen into the, you know, top 10, 15 cities of, you know, to go out to eat.
Right. I was watching Food Network the other night and they did a Best Thing You Ever Ate show and they did it dedicated to Atlanta. It was only Atlanta restaurants.
Oh, interesting. I missed
that. For like at least a half a dozen different kind of meals.
That's awesome.
Right. I mean, so if we have to fill a show.
Right, right.
That shows you that it's stiff competition, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we, you know, we have a number of nationally acclaimed restaurants in the market as well as chefs. You know, I think the growth of Top Chef and in those types of TV shows, you know, we've got a number of stars, you know, among us here in Atlanta.
And that makes everybody kind of raise their game.
It does. It definitely does.
So now when you're going into this as a multi-unit, so you know, like it's almost table stakes to have great food, right? So
right.
You got to create other reasons or memorable things, and that's where the gaming and the gathering spot, is that the thinking?
Yeah, the uniqueness of Hobnob, you know, versus our competitive set of other restaurants out there, it is that you walk in the door and you can pick up a board game. So that's mm-hmm. definitely unique. But also, you know, at our newer locations, we have 200 whiskeys at the bar.
Wow.
So, you know, it's from Scotch to Irish whiskey to Japanese whiskey and a really large bourbon collection. Mm-hmm. So that's something else that makes us unique in the marketplace. Now, there's other people that have bourbon collections, but, you know, not with the type of atmosphere that we have.
And do you do kind of tastings and do you do events around that?
We do. We do tastings on Thursdays. We do flights of whiskeys throughout the week. We change the flight every week. And then coming up in February, we're going to have a bourbon and chocolate event right around Valentine's Day.
Wow. Now, what about social media? How has that impacted your, you know, the marketing and the way you guys go to...
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, Instagram is the driver right now in the restaurant world. You know, folks love to take pictures of food. And, you know, chefs are looking at their food to make sure it's Instagram worthy.
Right.
So, you know, that definitely has a big impact. But we also, you know, it depends on the demographic. We do well with Facebook. You know, Facebook's not dying. It's, you know, it's out there and it drives people into the restaurants.
So now when you're designing a restaurant, do you have to pay attention to things like, well, we better get better lighting here. If they're going to take a picture, I want to make sure that the picture shows up well.
Yeah, lighting's really critical. It has been in restaurants. I think people are paying more attention now. It's one of my kind of pet peeves when I go into the restaurant, into another restaurant, and the lighting's not right. I was in a restaurant a couple of weeks ago, and it was all LED lighting, and I took a picture of their food. It was awful.
Right.
You know, it wasn't something that looked good on Instagram.
Right. You're so they're going to pay a price for that, right?
They will.
Now, what about, do you create kind of photo op things in the design of the restaurant, like backgrounds? And I mean, I guess you had the board game. So you have things that are very visually oriented. So when they do take a picture, it's really going to pop.
I think the design of our restaurants naturally goes that direction just because we're looking at, you know, if you go to our Perimeter Place location, looks like it's been open 10 years, but mm-hmm. in a good way.
Right.
So it just feels comfortable. And yeah, throughout the restaurant, there are definitely different little vignettes of design that you could definitely capture with people and food.
Now, for you, what do you need more of right now?
You know, it's just the labor battle. So, you know, we're able to staff and we're getting close here at our Perimeter location, but it's just keeping staffed and keeping folks motivated and keep them on the team. That's always, you know, among all the restaurants here in Atlanta, I believe that's our biggest challenge.
So it's open right now?
Yes, it is. It's open.
So yeah. It's open for the public and it's lunch and dinner?
Lunch, dinner, and brunch on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So we open at 10:30 on Saturday and Sunday for brunch.
And then what's kind of a brunch at Hobnob look like?
Brunch at Hobnob, most importantly for the millennials out there, it's bottomless mimosas, you know, which definitely drives a lot of our traffic in all three locations.
That's your secret sauce.
Yeah. That is. But yeah, we have, you know, Nashville chicken and waffles. And so we have some fun things on the menu and, you know, some of your typical brunch fare. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, being able to come in. And again, some folks pull out a board game for brunch, you know, so you can hang out there.
And you encourage that. It's not like you're kind of giving them stares.
Yeah, we're not, you know, we're not pushing the turntables. We want folks to come in and enjoy themselves.
Good stuff. So any lunch go-to that you have?
You know, right now, the chicken salad with a tomato biscuit lunch, it's a great meal. It's not too heavy. It's $10.
Wow.
Monday through Friday. So that's actually been my go-to. I think I've eaten it 3 or 4 times in the last 10 days.
And that's probably what happens, right? You get in the mood for something, you can't get out of your head.
Absolutely. It was pot pies before that, just because of the weather.
All right. If somebody wanted to learn more about Hobnob, are all the Hobnobs their website for everybody, or you have each store has an individual?
We're all together. Hobnobatlanta.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you for being part of Office Evolution Radio.
You're welcome.
All right. Next up on Office Evolution Radio, I got Emily Yu. Did I say that right?
You did.
All right.
Good morning.
With You Family Law. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about You Family Law. How are you serving folks?
I am a family law attorney, and my law firm does all family law. I do divorces, custody modifications, child support, alimony. I also am a guardian ad litem who's appointed by the court to investigate the best interest of children, and I'm a mediator.
Wow. Busy, busy, busy.
A little bit.
So how did you decide to make family law your specialty?
I actually went into law school not knowing what area of law I wanted to do, but I quickly learned, one, that I enjoy litigation and being in the courtroom. I'm probably one of a more limited number of family law attorneys who are happy to take a case to trial if needed. And then I also have a psychology background. I like dealing with families and in particular children. And so family law was a good fit for me.
Did you try other areas of law?
I tried a little bit of transactional. I've tried being in the prosecutor's office. I've tried some personal injury and workers' compensation as well.
So when you tried those, what was the things that you were like, you know what, maybe I got to kind of go family?
I think for me, family law works well because I have an opportunity to work very closely with people and their families, and I have an opportunity to help them rebalance a relationship dynamic that hopefully will allow them to be better parents and co-parents for their children. And so for me, I feel like this is a way for me to impact people on a, you know, on a more daily, real level.
Now, the stakes are super high, right? And you're advocating for your clients. Is there, how do you kind of manage the human part of this?
So there are times when things are very stressful or when there are issues that are very, very stressful, including, you know, child abuse or allegations of sexual molestation. I tell my clients that we are always going to handle our case ethically, honestly, and professionally. I will fire a client for knowingly lying because I believe that, especially when children are involved, that those are the only guidelines you can use to make sure that you come out of your case with whatever that right result is.
Mm-hmm. And then, so then that helps you kind of vet your clients, right? If you can sense that there's a problem in that area, then it's not the right fit.
That's exactly right. And I also tell clients that, you know, they should interview other attorneys as well. You know, they have to make sure that who they select is a good fit for them. And I may not be the right person.
Right. Now, when you're working with a client, what does the onboarding look like when the first time they come in? I'm sure that it's not like they do this every day. So what can they expect?
Well, I try to make the initial process as stress-free as possible. And I usually tell them, you know, come in with some income information. Tell me what you know about how your finances are managed. Tell me what you know about what assets you have. But if you don't know that information, it's okay. We are going to figure it out as we go.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing for me when they come in is that they can tell me, again, honestly, what is it that they want? What are the problems that have been going on? And what do they think is best?
And so you discuss like possible outcomes that are acceptable or they'd like to have?
Yes. Yeah, so I go through possible outcomes based on what they've shared with me. The interesting thing about family law that's different than other areas is that evidence builds as the case goes, right? So I remind people that you should be on your best behavior, and that that will have an impact on the outcome as well. And then given the fact that we're working with people, relationships, and children, the cases also change over time. You know, as a child goes from 12 to 14, if you're still in litigation, that will shift the dynamic about how your case will resolve.
And they may not know that going in, right?
Correct. And then there's always the wild card if they decide not to settle and go to trial. And I tell them, you know, a judge is like any other human being. They could have a good day. They could have a bad day. And at the end of it, they're getting a very small glimpse of your life. And so I try to avoid trial. I try to tell my clients to work on settling if possible. And then sometimes there are issues that just don't settle and you decide to take your chances with the court. But I never guarantee an outcome because I cannot control judge.
Right. No matter what you say or do.
It's not up to me.
It's out of your hands at that point, right?
And I remind my clients it's out of their hands, too. If they decide to settle, at least they still have some control over this outcome.
But that's what, because I guess people in their head think this is right and fair, so this should be the outcome. And that's not necessarily what happens, right?
And I think that's the hardest part. I think the perfect example of this is in adultery. A lot of people will come to me and say, well, you know, he or she cheated on me, and so they shouldn't be allowed to be with the children.
Right, and here's all this evidence. It's black and white, right? It's right in front of your face.
Well, and so Georgia law actually defines adultery as intercourse, which is very hard to actually prove. Even with the best PI, I may not be able to get those pictures. But most of the time, you have enough evidence to know that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty is, one, does adultery mean that someone is a bad parent or just a bad spouse, right? There's a distinction there. And then two, people tend to forget that particularly in metro area Atlanta, our judges see adultery all the time. And, you know, when people make the assumption that adultery is going to have this huge effect.
This monumental impact on the judge.
Right. And sometimes they're very wrong. And you know, we don't know the personal lives of the judges who are judging us.
Right.
I think we would all be.
They might have.
Exactly.
Doing adultery.
Right. So you want to be careful with that.
Right. If you're going to play that card as the person's the devil for this and the judge is doing it, you may not get him on your side.
And people forget that when they're emotional.
Right. So I guess that psychology background helps a lot, right? Because you have to kind of manage them emotionally through this.
I think a lot of family law, what I say to people is I'm more than your attorney. I am your counsel. I can give you the legal advice. I can tell you what, you know, what the law says and what the case law says. But I'm an attorney who's also going to talk to you about the emotional and mental impact of your actions and decisions. You know, everything's a cost-benefit analysis, but I can't value how much this stress is on you, or I can't value how much your failing to interact with your co-parent is going to have on your children, right? Only my client can value that, and then they can assess it from there.
And because that's how they have to think, right? Because if the kid's four, you're talking 14 years at least.
At least.
Right.
And I tell my clients, you know, you want to be there for the college graduation.
Right.
You want to be there for the wedding, for the birth of your grandchildren. And you don't want your grandchildren to sense that there's been a problem with their grandparents. That's ridiculous.
Right. And that's, I guess, you lose sight in the emotion of that moment or the betrayal that you feel happened. And then you're asking them to kind of look past that, look down the line to future them.
And it can be very hard for people to do because the emotions are very real.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through a divorce myself, and I think that's helped me in my practice because...
From an empathy standpoint?
Correct. And I understand the feeling of, I'd rather pay my lawyer. and I didn't do it that way, but, you know, those feelings are real. Mm-hmm. And the idea of, I'll just give away everything to get out of this, that's a very real feeling too.
Right. So the other side, like on one side, you're saying, okay, I'm going to get every last nickel. And then another thing is, okay, I don't even care about this because I just want out.
Exactly. And a lot of people have that attitude. And, you know, when someone comes to me with that, I tell them, look, this is your life, this is your money, and this is your future. You are my client. You make these decisions. However, if you walk away from everything, how are you going to start your future?
Right.
You know, and then the decision's up to them.
Right. And then for you doing this, it sounds like from your standpoint, it's you're getting involved emotionally a lot, but you have to kind of keep a distance. Is that hard for you to keep that balance, that work-life balance?
It can be. I've gotten better with it over time. I do think it's a practice, and I think every attorney has had a case or two where they've gotten too personally attached.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to do that because I'm no longer serving my client's best interest
right.
that way. I am best when I am neutral. And so
but you have to be neutral without being cold, right?
Correct. And I think the easiest thing for me in maintaining that balance is to remind myself that this is their life and these are their decisions.
And their choices.
Correct. And so if they want to make a choice that is not great for them, in my opinion, I'm still not the one who has to
right.
live with it. They have to, and I have to let them do that.
And you just present the facts as you see them, and they get the ultimate call, not you.
Right.
You can just recommend.
Exactly. And I think it's important for an attorney to understand that's their role, too. I don't make these decisions for anybody. They're not mine to make. And so that helps with the balance.
Now, any moments that you remember that were rewarding that you felt like, wow, I really kind of made a difference?
I am fortunate because I've had a lot of those moments. I've had a number of clients reach out to say that, you know, they're doing much better. They were so grateful for the counsel and the guidance through that process. I've had custody situations work out well for the children based on my investigation and recommendation. I consider myself pretty fortunate in that. I've got a lot of good moments.
Now, have you ever had something where maybe at first you both thought it was going to go one way and then you start digging in and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, where did this come from? And like, you know, one of those movies where they have a whole second life or some.
Yes, those clients are ones I tend to
happen?
Fire. Yes. Some people don't always tell you all the relevant facts.
Or what they think is relevant.
Correct.
Right? I guess
and,
that's in the eye of the beholder, relevant, right?
And being blindsided at court in front of the judge
that's
is
not
probably one of the worst moments. Because, you know, if you haven't prepared your lawyer for what's to come and they get caught off guard.
That's not good for anybody.
Exactly.
So that's happened?
Oh, yeah, that's happened.
Has it ever happened the other way where the other lawyer got surprised?
Yes. But, you know, our rules of civil practice and our laws don't allow us to do trials the way you see on TV, meaning that we don't get to pull out surprise evidence that we haven't shared. So if I'm going to surprise somebody, it's because they didn't do their job and ask me the right questions ahead of time to be prepared, because our laws don't really let us do that.
So now, any advice for someone that is going through a divorce? Like, is there, before they contact you, what should they be doing to kind of get ready to contact
sure.
you?
Well, number one, they should assume that everything they write will be shown to the judge. Everything they say is being recorded. I would not underestimate anybody in the process. If they have certain strong opinions about the other party, I'd ask them to not publicize them. Let's stay off of social media.
Oh, so like sometimes people go on like on one of the social media channels and just start blasting the other.
I get a lot of information on social media.
Is that true? Has that happened like 10% or more?
More.
And really?
You know what happens a lot is the client's new fiance likes to post pictures of the giant ring while I'm in the middle of a child support case and child support wasn't paid.
Poverty, right?
Exactly. That happens a lot.
Really?
Yes. Social media hurts most people. So I would tell potential clients to step
back. Maybe hit the brakes a little bit.
Yep. And no matter how complicated or uncomplicated they think their issues are, everyone should consult with an attorney. At least do a consultation. It doesn't mean you have to hire, but get information so that you know what you're talking about when you go in to negotiate these things.
Do some couples try to do this, hey, let's not hire an attorney. Let's just kind of, we know each other for 20 years. Let's just do this ourselves.
So most of the time they say that to each other. And at least one has consulted with someone.
So they have more information. Maybe.
Correct. And it's just a bad, it's a bad practice. Everyone should consult with an attorney. Everyone should know what the laws are so we know what we're working within.
Because a layperson doesn't know what they don't know, right? They know something, like you said, that they saw on television.
Exactly. You know,
those shows.
Right. A lot of people might think, oh, well, this account isn't only in my name, so he doesn't get it. That's not true.
Right.
In Georgia law says that everything from the date of marriage forward is marital, regardless of title. So, you know, things like that are important for people to know.
Now, we talked a lot about kind of the bad stuff of family law. Isn't there some, do you do wills and trusts and things like that?
I don't do any of that nice, happy stuff.
So you do all of the...
I do the hard stuff. I actually, I am my best in a highly contested custody action. Mm-hmm. I do well with high conflict parents.
So that if you have a spouse that's feisty, they should be calling you.
Yeah. I have decent client control. I'm not afraid to yell at my clients. I'm not afraid to tell them that they're being real, unreasonable or a jerk or worse. And I think that's kind of what helps me in these situations.
Now, what about advice for the person that thinks they might have trouble, like they sense something's amiss?
Continue to be on your best behavior. And you know, I'm not one that's advocating for divorce.
But are there red flags? Like, what are some red flags?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, certainly the obvious ones, people not coming home, not returning phone calls. And, they're, you know, when people are out of their routine is usually when you can sense it. Certainly changes in how finances are being handled tend to signal something. Those are probably the biggest red flags people can look for.
Is there any time, do you have a story where somebody just missed everything? Like, it was, to you, it was obvious, and then they were just kind of, you know, oblivious?
Well, you know, we have a lot of situations where, you know, based on the division of labor in a family, you still have situations where one spouse is not on any of the bank accounts, does not know what any of the money is. And so I think it tends to be people in that position who are hit the hardest because all the external indicators of something are not necessarily obvious. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if we go back and trace those accounts, you know, so-and-so has been moving money for 4 months.
So it was obvious if you were paying attention.
Exactly.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more or have more substantive conversation, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can call or they can email me. I am a small practice to be able to give my clients kind of individualized attention. They can also find me online at my website or on AVVO, A-V-V-O.
And then what's your website?
YouFamilyLaw.com.
And that's YouFamilyLaw.com.
That's correct.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
All right. Hang with us. We've got a pair of guests from one company. You guys ready? One of you?
We're ready.
I don't know. You don't look ready. I'm a little nervous. You guys are the wild cards here. I got Lauren Gall and Melanie Ammerman, and they are with VAVA Virtual Assistants. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for having
me. You guys, one at a time. You got to get in the mic. Rockstar the mic. Up. Oh, I got my producers coming in to the rescue. Now everybody gets a mic. Well done. All right, Lauren, lean in there and say something smart. Tell us about VAVA.
Well, we are a virtual assistant firm. We've been around for a little over 7 years, and we specialize in administrative back office support and marketing services for our clients.
So now, how'd you get into this line of work?
We fell into it. I was in small business sales, and I sold virtual receptionists and eFax, and most of the people that I talked to had a need for a virtual assistant, but they either didn't have the money to pay for somebody to come in-house or didn't have enough hours to give somebody full-time work. And we talked about it.
How do you know Melanie?
We actually met through a mutual friend at the time. And
Same background, Melanie?
No, I actually have a background in psychology.
Oh.
But I didn't go that route, and I had a lot of admin experience, actually, so it was a really good fit when we started.
So you both were working as admin or have some experience in that side of the table?
Yes.
And then you saw, wow, there's a lot of people who need this service.
Yeah, we saw a high need in the marketplace, and we literally developed the idea and started a business the next week.
So now at first, were you the assistant?
Yes.
So at first you were the assistant, but now you have a team of assistants all over the planet?
All over the country.
All over the country.
Yes.
Is that an important distinction to have U.S. assistants as opposed to some of these are offshore?
Yeah, I think for us it's a good distinction. And yeah, we've always been U.S.-based for our clients, and we do get asked that a lot for potential clients as well.
Do you try to align the assistant with the time zone of the client, or is that not important?
Sometimes for clients it is important. Other times it doesn't matter because we have, like, for example, we have a client on the West Coast and her VA is on the East Coast, and she loves it because when she wakes up in the morning, everything's done.
Right. She's getting a running start. So what's harder, to get clients or to get good assistants?
Good assistants.
Is it?
There are a lot of people out there that do really great work, but it's kind of finding them and grabbing them for our company.
Do you have to train them? Because if they've been an assistant in, like, real life, that's a different kind of experience, right?
Yeah, so there is a big difference being
Virtual as opposed to like in someone's office where they can just yell down the hall.
Yeah, and working virtually is very different from working in the office. So we have found over the years there have been good people that have worked in an office setting, but they don't necessarily thrive in a virtual setting. So we do look for people that have both virtual and administrative.
So now, if somebody has never used a virtual assistant before, is that some of your clients have never used virtual? So what does that learning curve look like to kind of teach them how to get the most out of this?
I think for us, we train our VAs to push them along. If they've never used it before and they don't know where to even start, we do have an assessment that we send them. Mm-hmm. They can fill that out, and that way it kind of goes over what they can use us for. But as far as, like, if they sign up as a client and they've never used it before, we always suggest certain things, like, you know, bi-weekly phone calls or weekly phone calls with your VA. Always just be thinking about your VA, because the more stuff that you send over, the more time you're going to get back in your day to actually do what you need to be doing in your business.
But is it hard for someone who's never used it to understand, like, do they buy it, like, hourly? Like, how does, or is it, like, per month? Like, how do you purchase the service?
Yeah, the typical setup is a monthly retainer, which mm-hmm. is you get basically a block of hours every month to use toward the tasks that you need help with. Then that can be adjusted as tasks increase as time goes on. That usually happens. And as they get more comfortable with the virtual experience and they, you know, understand how to hand stuff off more easily.
So that's because they don't know what they don't know, right? So they're like, how do you begin? Like, how do they know what to start feeding the assistant?
Well, we go through their day on their
okay,
call,
so as part of
them.
The onboarding,
yeah.
You're like, okay, tell me about what you did on Monday.
Yeah, and we go over their short-term goals, their long-term goals. Where are you seeing gaps in your, you know, daily work life, essentially? And sometimes it is us really digging into their day-to-day to really find out, like, where they can use us. But most of the time people know, mm-hmm. oh, scheduling is a problem, or I need to enter, you know, data, business cards into my CRM, you know, things like that, that we can then go in. And then as we get more and more into the tasks, we add on more tasks.
So now some of the tasks are like you said, my schedule. So that means the assistant would be doing the back and forth with the whoever you're trying to schedule, not me.
Correct.
Or what about like we're doing this show right now. And for me, it would be great if somebody was, as we're doing this, they're listening and then they're kind of tweeting or doing some social media. Is that some of the tasks that you could do as well?
Yes. We have a marketing side of our business. So we have digital marketers on our team that can, you know, come up with a plan of implementation and execution on your digital.
So it's
campaigns.
Not just administration. You also do marketing as well.
Yes. We have a lot of clients that get administrative and marketing. So that's a team of two VAs. So they're working with two people on our team.
What about, like, bookkeeping and kind of accounting kind of stuff? Do you do that as well?
Yes, we can absolutely do that
as well. So that's a third. Now I have a crew with me.
Now you have a Vava crew.
You kind of have a whole team behind you, you know, working with Vava. Because you have your couple main people, but if you need some specialized tasks that we offer, we have those people on our team as well that can step in and help out.
Do I have a Vava kind of account manager that knows my account? And then if an assistant comes and goes, then they can retrain the next person? Like, how does that work? Or is my relationship with the assistant and not really Vava?
It's both, I would say. We have somebody that kind of oversees all the clients and the team members and what's going on. Mm-hmm. So if there needs to be a transition, let's say the virtual assistant is moving on from Vava, there's a
'cause that happens occasionally,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's a 2-week period where you know, a new VA comes in and gets trained by the existing one, and everything is kind of transferred over. So we do have a plan in place for that when that happens.
Now, do you have any stories you can share? I wouldn't name names, but where a client maybe had never used a virtual assistant, started using you, and then their business grew?
We have a lot of stories. It's business growth and just time. I mean, we had a client the other couple months ago that was like, I wish I had hired you 3 years ago.
Yep.
So, you know, just the time that they get back with their families and time to focus on their business is sometimes the most valuable aspect of what we provide to them.
Now, what about the person that isn't a great delegator? Like, they're the control freak that doesn't like to look. Emily's nodding. She knows what I'm talking about. Have like kind of counseling, or is that where your psychology degree comes in?
No, we kind of get that sense when we talk to them, and we would probably pair them with a VA that's really proactive and kind of can, you know, pry those things off of their plate. Exactly.
So now, so the matchmaking is an important component to make sure that you have the right fit.
Yes.
Like, how'd you learn how to do that? There must be some scar tissue there.
There is. And, you know, just over the years, we kind of get a really good sense of what our clients' needs are. And we also have a good sense of the different types of assistants. You know, there are some that are really good at, you know, taking care of tasks as they come in, at more project-oriented. And there are some that are more proactive, like, hey, I'm, you know, like on top of their clients, like, I need this, I need this, I need this to get this, 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 and this done. So we have an idea of who we have on our team, who our clients are, and we can kind of pair them.
Because some people are like, oh, if you tell me to do these 10 things, I will do those 10 things. But they're not thinking of, oh, you know what? This would be good if you did this. Like, mm-hmm. That's a different personality type, mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
So you do assessments kind of on both sides, on the assistant side and the client side to really understand, like, if a person needs someone to be proactive, they're not going to be happy with the person, even if they're thorough doing the 10 things on the list, because they need
Correct.
Them to kind of be ahead of them in some ways.
Yes. And we get a sense from our clients as well, like, what they're looking for in their assistant. Do they mm-hmm. just want somebody there when they have projects come up, or do they want somebody kind of, you know, on their tail, getting them to get stuff off
to
their
plate. Push them a little mm-hmm. bit also. So they become also an accountability partner in some ways?
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, we have a lot of clients that are, you know, they wear a lot of hats.
Right.
And they have to do a lot of things. And so they just need their VA to kind of ground them, make sure that they're staying on track with everything.
And also making sure that the trains run on time, right? Like, they got to yeah. make sure everything is working the way it's supposed to be on the background so the client can focus on what's ahead.
Right.
Yep. Now, what's the most rewarding part of your job?
I love that we can help other small businesses grow. We can be their right-hand person to take things off their plate, gives them more time to, you know, grow their business instead of focusing on the day-to-day that kind of bogs them down. It's really nice to hear when, you know, somebody's like, I wish I hired you 3 years ago, because it's just gives them the boost that they need.
Now, when was the last time you guys high-fived over some big achievement?
Probably recently.
I don't know. We high five every day.
Yeah.
So what gets you excited?
New clients. Providing good work.
Clients.
Testimonials. Mm-hmm. Like, so when we get testimonials from clients and they're, you know, those like completely make my day for sure. But also back to your question about the most rewarding, I mean, being able to provide a service that, like Melanie said, directly relates to them building their business. I mean, that's a very rewarding feeling, and it's not going to break the bank. Like it's an affordable service to be able to provide people. So.
Now, do you focus on certain niches, or do you, like, who's the best client? What's a profile of a good client for you? Like you say, small business, but a small business could be a manufacturer, they could be a lawyer, they could be a restaurateur. Like, what does a small business look like?
We actually have a plethora of industries we work with. It's just who finds value in having this type of service for them at this certain time. We do have, like, a large percentage of our client base, you could say, are executive coaches.
Coaches.
Yes. So they, you know, help other businesses as well and leaders right. in their fields. And
so they might be a firm of just themselves.
Exactly.
And so, like, the more coaches you know, the better it is for your business. Typically that way, because how do you find new ones? Do the coach refer you to other coaches?
Yeah, we get a lot of times. We get a lot of referrals. Yeah, we get at least a couple a week.
From one coach saying, hey.
Yeah. Or more recently, from the work that our assistants are providing. Like they'll be working with somebody, maybe scheduling or mm-hmm. on a marketing website or something like that. And somebody else sees it and they're like, well, who did that?
That was cool.
We just got like three between last week and today. Have people that are interested because of the work.
Now, how'd you get into coaches? Did you start, or that was kind of a happy accident that some coach found you and all of a sudden you're like, wow, we're sure. All of a sudden we're getting all these coach clients.
I think a happy accident.
Yeah. I forget and exactly how it happened. Yeah. But yeah. We just started working and then, yeah, one referral and then two, three, four.
And all of a sudden you're like, wow, we do a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
It's a really good match. They're always on the go and kind of traveling and this and that and maybe work virtually themselves. So having a virtual assistant. Yeah.
Now, but either one of you had that you ever worked in with coaches prior?
Nope.
So this was new to you. So that's kind of serendipity, right? Like that was
absolutely
interesting. How did you imagine your clients, what did you think your client pool would look like when you first started?
That's a great question. I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I think we were so broad in thinking that it was just like, we can help anybody. At that, when we started, we were like, we can help anyone.
Like everybody needs
this. Yes, everyone needs this. And in a sense, that could be true, but you know, there are different stipulations for what makes for the perfect client and what makes for them to sign up. So
what do you need more of right now? You said, I guess, more virtual assistants. That's harder to find.
It's I mean, managing a team that, is especially in a virtual setting, like Lauren had said, kind of having that virtual capacity is really, really important. And they need to serve our clients well. So it's, we're really... We put a lot of importance in finding the right people for our team to make our clients happy and do good work.
Do you do anything to kind of create a community for your assistants?
Yeah, we try our best. We have like a group company chat. We have, company calls.
Where they support each other.
Exactly.
We had a virtual pizza party.
A virtual pizza party.
With our team. We had a virtual pizza party and a virtual holiday party.
Yep.
Yeah. And so you have assistants all over the country?
Yes.
What was it like the first time you hired that first assistant? Were you nervous?
No, he was great. And he was with us for maybe 5.5 years.
Wow, good run.
Yeah. So, but it wasn't hard to hire him because he was just great. And then we realized, like, after hiring him, okay, He has this skill set that we need in order to grow our company, and then that's kind of where
that became the profile of what a virtual assistant should look like.
Yeah.
So now, the pain that your clients are having before they call you is what? They feel overwhelmed, or things are falling through the cracks. Like, what are the problems that someone that's listening would be having that they're like, hey, we should call the VaVa Virtual folks?
They don't have enough hours in the day to get everything they need done.
So they feel like they're underwater all the time.
Yeah, they're doing things they're that they're behind. Not necessarily skilled at, like social media, for example. A lot of mm-hmm. people think they you just go on and post, but there's actually like a science behind social media and advertising right. and all of that stuff. So, and people just try to do it because they just, that's what they try to do. Right. And we
it
can
seems
do
easy.
That for them.
It's free. So yeah. I can do this or I'll get my nephew to do this because right. they're 20.
Yeah, exactly.
If they have a lot of repeated daily tasks too that they do all the time that takes up a lot of time and they're just like, oh, I wish I could go to this networking event, but I can't because I have to,
do this,
you know, create invoices or something for all my clients. Like that's a lot of, that's the stuff that you would hand off and then you can get that time back for your business.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you? You have a website?
We do have a website.
You want to tell us?
VavaVirtual.com.
VavaVirtual.com.
Yes.
Well, thank you both for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Office Evolution Radio.